Welcome to the Collaborative Psychiatry Podcast, where we help busy primary care providers build confidence in managing mental health. I'm Dr. Daniel Suter, a psychiatrist trained in general and addiction psychiatry, and currently working in collaborative and integrated care. I created this platform to make psychiatric education simple, practical, and genuinely useful for real-world medicine. Thanks to the support of our subscribers, this podcast remains completely free of commercial influence. Everything you hear reflects my own clinical experience and interpretation of the literature. No sponsorships or outside agendas at play here. If you want to learn more about our mission, visit us at collaborative-psychiatry.org. We've got in-depth courses, clinical tools, and lots of other subscriber resources. These quick take episodes are designed to give you high-yield, evidence-based tools that you can start using right away in clinic. If you're interested in more in-depth learning, check out our first full-length CME course on managing depression in primary care through our website. It's about an hour and a half long and covers everything from diagnosis to medication selection, augmentation approaches, ketamine, and more. If you find this quick take helpful, please don't forget to subscribe or leave a review, and check out our website for downloadable clinical tools and resources that will help you put the information you learn here into practice with your patients. Let's get into it. Today, I want to talk about stimulants. Specifically, I want to provide you with a framework for how to think about the use of stimulants in the treatment of ADHD in adults. This short podcast is not going to make you an ADHD diagnostician or even get into specific approaches to dosing, side effects, titration, etc. We'll have full-length courses on stimulants and ADHD coming soon, which will include many of the things we talk about today, as well as all of that. But today, I really just want to help you wrap your mind around this sometimes confusing and misunderstood class of medications and provide you with a general framework that you can use for prescribing them. I think stimulants feel a little bit scary sometimes for providers because it seems like there are 500 different types of stimulants out there, each with slightly different delivery systems, durations of effects, and public opinions to grapple with. But like with so many things in the world of psychiatry, this seemingly complex area can be simplified in a way that will make this class of medications feel much less overwhelming. First, our learning objectives. By the end of the episode, you should be able to identify the two main stimulant classes used for ADHD treatment in adults and understand their core similarities and differences. You'll be able to use a practical framework for choosing between amphetamines and methylphenidate classes based on symptom severity and patient characteristics. And finally, you'll be confident in selecting from a core group of these medications and adjusting dosing using long-acting and short-acting formulations for optimal symptom control throughout the day. Okay, so to start off with, I want to really narrow in on what we're talking about here. Yes, as we said, there are innumerable formulations of stimulants out there, but at the core, when we're talking about stimulant medications for ADHD, we're talking about two different molecules, the amphetamine molecule and the methylphenidate molecule. The amphetamine molecule was originally branded as Adderall, and the methylphenidate molecule was originally branded as Ritalin. So despite all the fancy names and the thousands of different branded release mechanisms, we're really just talking about these two core molecules repackaged in a variety of ways. And even between the two of them, if we're being honest, the similarities pharmacologically, as well as in terms of outcomes, are generally greater than the differences. They both work by increasing the amount of dopamine and norepinephrine in the prefrontal cortex, which is the hub of executive functioning in our brain. This is the part of our mind that is involved in planning, impulse inhibition, delayed gratification, problem solving, working memory, right? All the things that got you through your medical training, most likely. It's also the part that, in very crude terms, is a deficit in ADHD. And dopamine and norepinephrine seem to be the major neurotransmitters involved in our executive functioning. Now, just like we have SSRIs blocking the serotonin reuptake inhibitor in the brain, both amphetamines and methylphenidates are molecules that block the reuptake of dopamine and norepinephrine, thus leaving those two neurotransmitters out there in the brain for a longer period to do what they do. And that's the primary mechanism through which methylphenidate exerts its function. Amphetamine has two additional actions as well. It blocks the reuptake, just like methylphenidate, but it also actively stimulates the release of these two molecules, as well as blocks the degradation of them after they've been released. What this means clinically is that the amphetamine molecule can be thought of as a bit more potent than the methylphenidate molecule because of those two additional mechanisms of action. And that is the first point to keep in mind in terms of this framework I want to provide you with. Amphetamine formulations are typically going to be a little bit more potent in terms of their stimulant effect. This means that they might be a little bit more efficacious for those with severe ADHD, though there's a lot of individual variation out there in terms of response to one form versus another. But it also means that there's likely greater risk of stimulant-related side effects, as well as slightly higher risk of abuse or diversion. The way that this point impacts my prescribing or the choice between the two is that if someone has really severe ADHD or symptoms that are quite impairing, I'll typically start with an amphetamine formulation. However, if someone's symptoms are less severe or the diagnosis may be a little bit less clear to me, then I'll start with a methylphenidate formulation, resting assured that there's lower risk of side effect or abuse. So that's my decision tree in terms of approaching patients who are new to these medications. As with many things in psychiatry, if I've got a patient who already has experience with a certain medication and knows what works for them, that will typically trump this framework approach that I'm presenting, and I'll just restart what we know works. Now, once you've decided on the class of stimulants you're going to prescribe, methylphenidate versus amphetamine, the next decision point is whether you prescribe a long-acting or short-acting formulation. And this is where the next part of the framework comes into play, which is frankly just to simplify the list of stimulant medications in your mind. There are a mind-boggling number of stimulants out there, and that alone can make working with them feel overwhelming. And I certainly want you to know that there are a lot of different formulations available, but I only want you to have any familiarity with a very small handful to make it easier for yourself. I'm going to use the brand names here because it makes them a bit easier to distinguish, and that's how people commonly refer to them, even if they're no longer on patent now. So for long-acting amphetamines, there are two you should be familiar with. Adderall XR, which generically is extended-release amphetamine salts, and Vyvanse, which is generically lisdexamfetamine. Those are the two long-actings. For short-acting amphetamines, there's just one you got to know, Adderall IR. It's also known as mixed amphetamine salts. In the methylphenidate class for long-acting agents, there's, again, just really one that I would focus you on, and that's Concerta, which is methylphenidate ER. For short-acting methylphenidate, again, just stick with the classics here. Use Ritalin, which generically is methylphenidate IR. I've got no brand affiliation or financial interest in any of this. I'm just speaking from experience with the various medications and out of a desire to simplify things for you. So that's it. 5 meds, not 50. It's certainly enough. It gives you a variety of formulations and release patterns. They're all off patent. So outside of just finding them stocked in pharmacies, there are relatively few barriers to prescribing. And if you run through these and you can't land on something that helps your patient, in that case, it's certainly time to call in a specialist or get an outside opinion. Now, the next question, of course, is which one of these do I prescribe first? And again, I think a loose framework here can be really helpful. When I think about my initial choice of medication, as we've discussed, the first thing I think about is, not surprisingly, the patient sitting in front of me. And this goes back to the potency issue that we touched on before. Is this a patient who comes in, can't stay on topic during a conversation, she's fidgeting all the time, getting up and down throughout the conversation, answers me before I've finished a question, that sort of thing? The type of patient where you really don't have to be a psychiatrist or have a rating scale to say, I think this person has ADHD. In that case, I'm going to go down the amphetamine route because there's a chance that the higher potency will do a slightly better job overall with symptom control. On the flip side, if this is someone who on the face of it seems to be doing okay, they're working, they can hold a conversation normally, they don't have any obvious hyperactivity, someone who in general is less impaired by the symptoms, then I'd go down the methylphenidate route first. I'll be honest though, this triage point likely doesn't make a huge amount of difference in terms of outcomes, given the variability of responses we see. It's just a framework that I hold in mind and which helps me. So people with severe ADHD can have amazing responses to methylphenidate compounds like Ritalin or Concerta. And there are tons of people out there with mild ADHD on amphetamine formulations like Adderall or Vyvanse who are doing great. So the next question is whether you start with a long-acting or a short-acting formulation. And my go-to in 90% of cases is to start with a long-acting med first. So I'm either starting Adderall XR or Vyvanse for amphetamines, or Concerta as a methylphenidate. And there are several reasons for this. We know that across the board, medicine adherence is better with a once-a-day compound compared with twice-a-day meds. And the long-acting formulations are typically going to be once a day, so that makes them a good place to start. Secondly, the risks around diversion or abuse are reduced with long-acting compared with short-acting formulations, so we've got a little bit of assurance on that front as well when we start with a long-acting agent. In the more rare case that we'd be starting somebody on short-acting formulations right out the gate, which for me typically is if they have a history of treatment stability on short-acting agents that was better than they did on long-acting agents. In that case, we'll typically be writing them as BID scripts because that shorter half-life requires multiple doses through the day in order to provide enough coverage to last the full work or school day. Once you've picked your starting medication, whether it's Adderall XR or Ritalin IR or whatever else, you're going to have to titrate it over time, and you're aiming for good symptom coverage during the window of effect of that specific med. And the window of effect for any one med will vary a little bit from one person to the next. For the long-acting formulations, we typically expect them to last anywhere from 8 to 14 hours, and the short-acting formulations typically last from 3 to 5 hours, depending on the specific medication and the individual. Going up on the dose will increase the effect for that individual during the window of effect, but typically won't prolong the effect. Another thing that comes up sometimes is if you're titrating your initial medication and it just doesn't seem to be helping, or if the patient can't tolerate it due to side effects, then you're going to be switching to the other class of medications. So if you started with Adderall XR but it's not working, or the patient's feeling overstimulated or having other side effects, you don't want to switch to Adderall IR or Vyvanse, because we've just experienced that amphetamines don't seem to really do it for this patient. So instead, what you'll do is just switch over to the methylphenidate class and maybe try Concerta instead. Now, there are circumstances where you have someone on a long-acting agent, but the effect wears off before the day is over, and you need to prolong the effect. And in that case, what you'll do is add a short-acting agent from the same class in the afternoon to prolong the period of coverage. So if we have someone who started on Vyvanse, they found it effective, but they take it at 7 a.m. when they get up and then feel the effects start to wear off by 3 p.m., then have a hard time getting through the rest of the day, instead of increasing the dose, right, which would just increase the effect in that 7 to 3 p.m. window, we would consider adding on a short-acting Adderall IR dose, right, so the same class of medication as a long-acting agent, probably around 2 p.m. or so, in order to prolong the stimulant coverage during the day. Okay, so just to review this overall framework again, the first step in the process is determining if you're going down the amphetamine or methylphenidate route, and loosely speaking here, the more impairing the symptoms, the more likely I am to use amphetamines. The less impairing, the more likely I am to start with methylphenidates. Once you've made that decision, start with a long-acting formulation, so typically either Adderall XR or Vyvanse for amphetamines, and Concerta for methylphenidate. Then you'll work with the patient to titrate that medication up to an effective dose and determine the window of effect or how long it exerts symptom control for them. In an ideal situation, it lasts long enough for them to cover the full day and you're good to go. But if you get up to a good dose that works for them and it's not lasting long enough, Then you'll add on that short-acting agent in the afternoon, generally generic Adderall or Ritalin, in order to prolong the effect. And then you'll titrate that second medication up to the lowest effective dose for its window of effect. Okay, so that's the framework. That's it for now. There's so much more to unpack about stimulant medications, as well as about ADHD in general, especially all the nuances around diagnosing ADHD in adults in this age of distraction and mental health awareness that we currently live in. But we'll discuss all that and more in our two upcoming full-length audio courses on stimulants for ADHD and managing ADHD. So keep an eye out for those coming up. That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the downloadable companion resources for this episode available on our website at collaborative-psychiatry.org/quicktakes. For a small subscription fee that will help keep us up and running, you'll get access to detailed show notes, as well as a flowchart around stimulant prescribing, a stimulant medication reference chart, and several patient handouts on amphetamines, methylphenidates, and a medication tracker sheet that you and patients can use to track response and help with dosing. If this episode made your work a little bit easier, please consider sharing it with a colleague or leaving a quick review on whatever podcast app you use most frequently. It really helps us reach more providers and spread this information more widely. And now our disclaimer. The content in this podcast is intended for general educational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the establishment of a professional relationship. The use of the information in this podcast in clinical practice is at your own discretion and risk. Thanks again for joining us today, and see you back here in 2 weeks when we'll tackle a topic that's becoming more and more essential in primary care, buprenorphine. Whether you're prescribing it now or just want to understand it better, we'll cover the key concepts that you actually need to know. Talk to you next time.